Welcome to Inside Sponsorship, the show that provides sponsorship professionals with advice, insights, and news so they can maximize their commercial programs and achieve best practice.
The 49ers entered professional football in 1946 as a member of the All-America Football Conference. They were founded by lumber magnate Tony Morabito, who was one of the first to realise that with the advent of air travel, truly national professional sports leagues were possible. If only he could see the travel athletes and teams do today, both domestically and internationally. Indeed, the 49ers were the very first team in the four major North American sports to originate on the West Coast. The team's name came from the California Gold Rush gold seekers who came to the San Francisco area during 1849. It is the only name the team has ever been affiliated with, and San Francisco is the only city in which it has resided. The original team logo depicted San Francisco's wild beginnings. It was a gold miner in boots and a lumberjack shirt firing a pair of pistols. One shot just missed the miner's head while the other missed his foot. And the logo was taken from a design seen on the side of railway freight cars. The logo today and the 49ers brand is instantly recognised. The conviction, passion and character birthed laid the sturdy foundation that has enabled the 49ers to become one of the NFL's premier football powers. Hi, I'm Daniel Oyston, host of Inside Sponsorship, and you're listening to episode 121 brought to you by Core Software. I hope you are well and all is good in your part of the sponsorship world. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Inside Sponsorship. It's great to have you listening. Shout out time and just the one, and it is a blast from the past as Mark Thompson got in contact with me and said he wanted me to say hi to him on the show. Long-time listeners will remember Mark from the early days of the show, the Sponserve days, when he used to join us to discuss his latest blog, and it was always very insightful. And truth be told, I kind of miss those little chats. Well, here's your shout-out, Mark, and I hope all is well, and it's great to know that you still listen to the show. And I know you're going to love this one, considering you're a massive 49ers fan. As I mentioned, the conviction, passion and character birthed laid the sturdy foundation that has enabled the 49ers to become one of the NFL's premier football powers, and today, the 49ers brand is instantly recognised. To take us inside sponsorship at the 49ers is Senior Manager Partnership Sales, Cameron O'Toole. Cameron's first role in sports was a ball boy for his beloved Phoenix Suns, but post-college he found himself in a business ops role for the Seattle Reign FC in the Women's National Soccer League, and at the time the Reign were an expansion club just as women's sport was really starting to step into the spotlight. But from there, Cameron moved to the 49ers, and since then he's held multiple roles over the past 7 years, and now as Senior Manager Partnership Sales he takes us inside sponsorship at San Francisco 49ers. Here's Cameron. Cameron, welcome to the show. We always start the show with a few icebreaker questions just to warm up, ease into it, have a little bit of fun, and for the listeners to get to know you a little before we jump into the serious stuff. Your first icebreaker question is, what is the first ever sports sponsorship that you can remember?
It actually ties back to my first job in sports, which was I was a ball boy for the Phoenix Suns. And, you know, I was like 15 years old, so I really didn't have any kind of understanding of the sports sponsorship space yet. But now that I look back in the career that I have now, I realize that I was actually like directly involved in helping to execute one. And so there used to be this promotion in like the third or fourth quarter where a lucky row in the stadium would win free pizza. There was a local pizza place called Peter Piper Pizza where I grew up in Arizona. And so they had this sponsor moment in the stadium. And I actually would just help like bring all of the pizzas with the rest of the operations team into the section, and we'd like stage it, you know, beforehand, and then as soon as the break and play hit, we would go hand out all the pizzas and the mascot would be there and everything. So, you know, I was just doing whatever they told me to do back then, but now I realize, you know, that I was actually directly involved, which is kind of cool, full circle.
Very good, and a great activation, because it's all about getting the product in the hands of the consumers that they want to try and convert. So as we heard in the introduction, you spent some time in soccer, football, and now you are in the NFL. Let's say the game is on the line, Cameron, for the championship. Which would you be more confident in executing? Are you going to take a soccer penalty shot, or are you going to kick an NFL field goal?
I'm going to take a soccer penalty kick, even though I am absolutely terrible at soccer. I just could not imagine attempting to kick a field goal with guys also trying to tackle me and take me out. So I'm going to go with soccer, even though I don't have much confidence that I would even put it on frame or anything like that.
Did you play much sports growing up?
Yeah, I definitely played basketball, tennis, and golf primarily. I wish I would have played more golf because that's what I currently play as a hobby and wish I was better at it. But I tried to play as many sports as I could. I did not actually ever play football. So it's a little ironic that I'm, you know, now working in the NFL.
Excellent. Well, while I glossed over it in the introduction, it'd be great if you could tell us about your career progression now to your current role, because it hasn't all just been in the sports industry. It started with a focus on sustainability, didn't it?
It did, yeah. And in a roundabout way led me to here. I graduated from Arizona State with a bachelor's in sustainability. And it was kind of right on the heels of the recession that America had at that time. And I got a job in my field right out of school. And I think I got laid off within like 6 months of getting that job. And I kind of just like, you know, I wouldn't say that I loved it at the time. And I was ready to find a way to get back into sports somehow and really started to think about what that looked like. And so that led me to grad school at UMass to, you know, try and build my sports network and obviously my understanding of the industry and everything, which then eventually led me to my first job in sports. So getting laid off kind of, you know, pivoted my career at the moment and helped lead me to here.
As part of that journey in 2013, you got a phone call about working for the Seattle Reign FC, which at the time was an expansion franchise in the National Women's Soccer League. You didn't start in sales, but you did move into it while you were there. It's a stark contrast, an expansion team in women's sport at the time against a long-established male team in the NFL in the 49ers. I know you wouldn't have been able to appreciate this at the time, but looking back now, and apart from the obvious strong positioning that the 49ers brand occupies, how did your approach contrast in Seattle in terms of selling partnerships, and how does that hold you in good stead today?
The big focus in Seattle at the time was, you know, really growing our presence in the market and, you know, share of mind amongst sports fans in Seattle, you know, whereas here, right, like the 49ers have been around for over 75 years. So there's going to be just an inherent level of, you know, commitment from the community and the fan base here. And it's a vast fan base, right? Seattle, we were really, I mean, literally scratching and clawing, trying to get, you know, every single person in the area to just go to a game or to, you know, follow us on social media and, you know, not that every single fan doesn't count here either, because they certainly do, but, you know, we were in our infancy in Seattle trying to, you know, just grow our season ticket base year over year and, you know, kind of establish a foothold in what already was a very great soccer town. I think what is similar that I've taken from there is my mentality in just my day-to-day work ethic of how I approach sales. You're going to get told no a lot, and you need to grind to be successful. And that was Seattle for sure. Like, I mean, there were times when I would go meet with people and they would have no idea like who the team was prior to me establishing a meeting with them. Right. And so that just everyday energy of like really trying to sell and to, you know, make noise to a degree, that back what we were doing in Seattle, I think has, you know, just been instilled in me. And then where it's kind of come full circle and how that really relates now is back then there was such a focus on the community, right? Like people were investing in Seattle Reign FC. They were trying to help grow our team so we could provide outlets and aspirational goals for young girls in the Seattle area, right? Role models and everything like that. And so the investment became community focused. What I've noticed really in American sports, but particularly since the pandemic, is that there's been a reinvestment in that community, even at a, you know, higher NFL level, right? We had a lot of partners come to us, not only during the pandemic, but also post, that talked about, you know, how can we get more involved? How can we recalibrate what we're doing here and shift some of what we're doing? So there is a huge focus on our shared Bay Area community. So that's one thing I've definitely noticed that's kind of likened both jobs there.
That post-pandemic view and shift is really interesting. Cameron, now obviously you're at the 49ers. Before I move into some specifics and more details and some pointed questions, talk us through a little bit of an overview of some of the brands that you've brought on. Who's involved there at the 49ers?
It's one of the reasons I love the job, honestly, is because I am talking to so many different brands on a given day, right? So, I mean, some of them that come to mind, I had brought on Redbox as our bowl game entitlement partner a few years back, and they hosted a couple of Redbox bowls at Levi's Stadium. Denny Eyewear is another one that, you know, is one of the first partnerships that I put together here at the Niners that has stayed on, you know, over the course of the last 4 to 5 years. Mattress Firm became our official sleep partner a couple of years ago. Recently did a partnership with Cadence Design Systems, which is a massive technology company that's a Silicon Valley neighbor here just down the road. And they also have an F1 partnership. So we're excited about what's to come there. And then, you know, some other like more maybe traditional ones you would think of with sports, 1800 Tequila, the Federalist Wines, you know, products that are being consumed on a Niners game day here in Levi Stadium.
I've heard you speak about how you can't watch sports normally anymore, and that as you drive around the city, you're always noting the brands that are buying billboards who are active in other marketing channels. What are some of the criteria that a brand has to get a tick next to for you to get to a point where you think, okay, I'm going to reach out and I'm going to make initial contact and I'm going to suss them out?
I mean, it helps that I am a big sports fan, right? Because I would say primarily, like, I'm trying to keep a pulse on who is activating in sports, who's spending on media around sports, who really is like trying to reach a sports fan, right? And those consumers and, you know, across all sorts of leagues, there are direct parallels, right? Like, I can look at other NFL teams and there are traditional players in the sponsorship market, but then there's a lot of challenger brands too. For me being in this market, I think having a Bay Area presence is key, which is why like those billboards are always, you know, a source of inspiration, because you've got a lot of local brands that are advertising, you know, whatever the services that they offer. I mentioned the sports presence. That's everything from, you know, watching my favorite team on ESPN to listening to, you know, radio advertisements out here, and, you know, who's purchasing media in San Francisco Giants games or 49ers games, right? There's a lot of different ways you can go with it. The other piece to it that I would say as it directly relates to us is we obviously are looking at our portfolio of partners and our partner family and seeing where there could potentially be openings, right? And so, you know, our goal is to always have exclusive partnerships where a partner can really like own that category. So oftentimes those categories are blocked out for me because I'm not going to go bring in a competing partner, right? So that kind of helps to set the landscape for me as well and give me a little bit of guardrails to play within, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And so following on from that, let's say that I'm a brand that you've identified could be a great fit for the 49ers. It has all of those ticks that means you're going to reach out. I'm just running around doing my business, doing my thing, getting stuff done day to day in my organization. What does that initial contact look like from you? And what are you trying to position as the next steps when you make that initial contact?
Yo, it's funny you said that part about just kind of running around and doing your normal day to day. I mean, that's one of the challenges, right? Like I think every partnership has like a different origin story. And there's so many different ways that you can reach out to individuals now, but ultimately, like, I always think of the moment when my email comes through to someone or my phone call and they're like in the middle of doing, you know, their regular Monday meeting and they're like, who is this guy that's trying to reach out to me to talk to me about something I probably haven't thought about I mentioned like traditional players in the sports industry that are spending in sports and advertising. Those are definitely out there, and they probably have like dedicated sports marketing budgets. But a lot of brands that I reach out to don't. And some of them have never even really considered sports partnership or sponsorship. And so those are some of the interesting ones, because you kind of have to reframe the conversation of like, okay, well, you are spending media in these areas, but some of those same, you know, people that are viewing that are also, you know, in Levi's Stadium on Sunday, or they're following the 49ers on Instagram. And ultimately, like, I'm trying to get into contact. I'm trying to set up some sort of meeting, whether it be virtually or, you know, at their office, or hosting them at a game here, for them to just start to kind of understand, you know, what the 49ers ecosystem looks like, and how, you know, it might not be important for them, for their brand, to show up at the stadium on Sunday, but they might really value it showing up on Thursdays on Instagram, right? And those are the types of conversations that you want to ultimately get to start to figure out like what they value and what some of their marketing objectives may be.
You said earlier that you obviously hear a lot of no's and that you have to grind. You can get a lot of no's. They can come at different points in the process. So it could be early on, could be later on when you think everything's progressing really, really well. I've heard you say on another podcast that getting a no from a potential partner is just temporary. Now, Jordan Iannuzzi from New York Red Bulls was on the show recently, and he basically said the same thing, that a no is just a no for now. It's not a no forever. What's your approach to going back to what you think is a temporary no from a brand and checking in after a certain period of time? Because to be honest, everybody dislikes those salespeople where you've said no in the past, but you seem to just be on a list that they work through every so often, and they call until you have to say, look, can you just not contact me anymore? I'll contact you if I need something. What's your approach for sort of keeping what you would consider temporary no's warm without overstepping the mark?
Yeah, it's a fine line, because I've gotten those calls too, and I get annoyed. And, you know, I mean, those are, you know, I'm not trying to generalize, but those are the perceptions that, you know, you fight sometimes as a salesperson, because that doesn't do us a service when we're trying to reach out with, you know, real value or what we perceive to be a great opportunity. I think for me, the if I'm going to go back to someone and reach back out to them, it's going to be because I either saw their strategy change or evolve and I saw them doing something different. That could be a new brand campaign. It could be, hey, I actually just saw them do a sponsorship deal in a different sport or run a commercial on ESPN or whatever it is. Or it's going to be something that's changed on our end. And, you know, it's really just like, I want to make sure that at least is there, that initial baseline, because you're exactly right. Like if I just go back to people and say, hey, just checking in like 6 months later, it's really just a waste of time. They're probably not going to respond to me. And then I've just wasted time to even send the email and probably soured the relationship a little bit too. But there's also other things that can change. Like it might not be with the same brand, but you know, maybe I'm working with somebody in marketing at company A and they get a new job 6 months down the line at company B, and I have established some sort of relationship with them at the prior job. And so it's reasons like that too, that you always just kind of try to keep people in their network as they move around or as things change over time.
You mentioned earlier about sometimes making contact with a brand and maybe interrupting what they're doing on a Monday morning meeting or something like that. And they're like, who is this guy? And there needs to be some reframing from you. So with them, or even those who do know you and the 49ers reasonably well, what are some of the key selling points or storytelling themes that you build into pitches when you're looking for and talking to a new partner?
I think one of the simplest ways to boil it down is something that we've said about us before. Even though we don't typically lead with things about our organization, we prefer to tailor it to whoever we're reaching out to. But we like to say that we are a legacy brand with an innovative mentality, and we have the ability to influence. And those overarching themes can tie into a lot of different ways that we can storytell. Being here in Silicon Valley, right? Tech capital of the world, arguably. having that innovative mentality is super important. We're always trying to showcase, you know, new and engaging sponsorship activations in our stadium and be the first team and organization to do it. The ability to influence for most of the brands that we're speaking to, particularly if you're, you know, in the B2C space, is really important. And then fortunately enough, you know, being around for 75 plus years, like we do have a legacy here in the Bay Area and in the, you know, hierarchy of professional sports. And for some emerging brands, like they're looking to establish a little bit more legitimacy, right? Like maybe they're in their infancy as well. And having that brand association with us really helps them kind of break onto the scene if that's something they're looking to do. But, you know, as just as like an example, I mentioned that we really try to tailor it to the partner themselves. And I brought up Zenni earlier. You know, one of their initial taglines when we were talking with them was eyewear for everyone. And what we really tried to do with our partnership is kind of take that everyday fan and have Zenni's brand and product and overall image be in front of those fans anywhere we could. And so we did that in our stadium. We did that across digital and social channels. And it's been a really successful partnership.
That theme of being able to influence would really pique a lot of brands' interest because that's often what they're trying to do with their marketing, and they're trying to influence target audiences to take particular actions or maintain particular actions in engagement with their own brands. You are focused on sales, and a large part of that, once you identify a potential brand and there is some discussion, is trying to really nail down from that influence to what success actually looks like for them. A lot of brands simply say, well, we want more sales. It's about impacting the bottom line. That's fair. For some brands, that's okay, especially when they sell things that are transactional, low involvement, etc., like hamburgers or sneakers or t-shirts. But not all brands can do that. Not all brands can simply focus on brand awareness and take a consumer straight to sales. For those people, how do you workshop and go through a process with a brand to identify goals and objectives that can ultimately help them move their target audience to sales? For example, if they get A, B, and C steps right, then sales will be the end product or the end result, the byproduct of getting those steps correct. How do you work through that and unpack that with them?
One of the things I would say that I just always think back to with something like this is it's just a product of communication. Ultimately, like the more and more meetings and conversations you have to unpack these sort of things, the better on both sides it's going to be. When we initially meet with a partner or a prospective partner, you know, there may be one to two initial meetings, and then we'll typically put together, you know, what we think might be our best shot at a marketing plan for them. But, you know, I always say that we never bat 1,000 on those, right? I mean, there are usually of the 10 ideas that we propose, there might be 3 of them where, you know, you're in the meeting and they're like, yeah, that doesn't really make sense for us or whatever. And that's totally okay. It's actually great to get that feedback because then to your point, it's like, that's not how they go from A to C, right? You need to understand the customer journey. If, you know, it could be very different if you're buying a pair of glasses versus buying, you know, choosing what tequila you're going to order at the bar or at the stadium. So ultimately, it's just sitting down with them. We do this on the front end of the partnership when we're putting ideas together. And then ultimately, as we work to what the eventual marketing plan and assets look like. And then we do it on, you know, an annual basis as we sit down after every football season and work on recaps with our partners and say like, hey, here's kind of a snapshot of what the year looked like. Did you like this? Did you not like this? How can we tweak this moving forward? And then just regular check-ins throughout the year as well, as you can imagine.
Cameron, you mentioned about there in that process, having lots of meetings. Now, salespeople aren't generally known for their patience. They want to get the sales done. They like the hype of it, the excitement of it. Is slowing down and not breaking that process, because you do need to take your time and learn about all those things that you spoke about, is slowing down and not breaking the process something you need to work on consciously, or does it come naturally for you?
That's a really good question. I haven't necessarily ever had it asked me that way. I think it's a little bit of both, because I mentioned earlier, like, I pride myself on, you know, kind of grinding and trying to find a lot of, you know, potential prospects and set those meetings, like you mentioned. And, you know, sometimes as a seller, like, you're measured on some of those things as well, right? But the other piece to it is, if you have a good meeting, like, you definitely want to keep that momentum going. And I think what can sometimes happen is, you know, you may have a great initial meeting, and then the person you meet with has to take it to, you know, various internal conversations or approvals or whatever, and it can kind of die on the vine a little bit. And so I think it's knowing when to push to keep momentum going, but also, you're exactly right, having to tell yourself, like, hey, put the time into this and think about these ideas, because if you just throw something together, you don't want to waste, like, the one opportunity you have in front of someone, right? And so it's truthfully like a constant balancing act.
I always found that difficult when I used to work in sales, when boss would come to you and say, so how are we going with this prospect? Have you called them yet? When was the last time you spoke to them? And internally, you just know, it just needs a couple more days, or I need to send one more email before I pick up the phone. And so I think you make a good point. Managing other people's expectations is important there as well. Cameron, last season you announced United Airlines as the team's presenting sponsor for the playoffs. A bit of a multi-point question here. I don't usually like to ask these. I think it makes it difficult for the guest, for you to answer coherently, but let's see how we go. Firstly, let us know what the partnership involved, and then I'd love to hear about how long it took to bring that to fruition and ultimately what the goal of the partnership was and how it all played out in terms of success for both parties.
Those ones are always fun because it comes at a time in the season when, you know, you're riding high a little bit, right? And yeah, we had a run in 2022 that was awesome. Super fortunate to be a part of it, and unfortunately came up a little short, but it was still an awesome ride. And so I'll answer the timing piece first. It's always different. And, you know, thankfully we've been to the playoffs a few times here in my tenure. And, you know, I remember when we went back in 2019, I think we started the season 8-0 or 10-0. And so we had a pretty good idea that we were going to be in the playoffs, right? And then you contrast that to 2021, where we literally secured our playoff berth on the very last play of our very last regular season game. And what that does in you know, the NFL and a lot of American pro sports is it changes if you have home playoff games, it changes if you have road playoff games, and then that can dictate a lot of the timing and the assets that go into playoff partnerships. With United, they were kind of the overarching playoff presenter, as you mentioned. And so basically all of our content related to the playoffs included United in it in some form or fashion, whether that be on a graphic or, you know, tagged in a post or whatever it may be. They had a huge in-stadium presence on, like, all of our video boards and digital boards and everything as fans came in to Levi's for what were two home playoff games last year. And then they helped us with, like, a send-off and some special promo packages for fans that wanted to go out to Philadelphia for our game in the NFC Championship. At SFO as well, which was great. And so to answer your point on the timing, I think we probably put those together. I would say it was definitely in, like, December, early January of the season, with the playoffs starting in mid-January. So they come together really quickly, but part of that is just the nature of trying to sort through what the playoffs are going to look like in any given year.
So following on from that, Cameron, with United being the presenting partner for the playoffs, how does that impact existing partners? Is there a little bit of a sense that some of those partners might like to have been the presenting partner, or those conversations had and they're ruled out early, or is their contract just finished at the end of the regular season? How does that play out with the relationships with the existing sponsors and just bringing somebody else in that creates at a time where there's a lot of hype and a lot of eyeballs?
We typically give virtually everyone a seat at the table if they're able, but it's also a product of those conversations that I mentioned earlier. You know, it's knowing that this particular partner may be looking to do something more this season or really wants to make more of a splash this season. But with United, you know, they are one of our founding partners here at Levi's Stadium. And so we've been partners for a long time. We try to, you know, always start with our founding partners with these types of opportunities and then, you know, continue to ask around to other partners. But we also virtually ask every partner like how they want to be involved with playoffs. And as you can imagine, some of that is dictated by investment level or how many years they may have remaining in their partnership and all sorts of things like that. But United was just, you know, a real natural fit for us.
A few years ago, you named Mattress Firm, the nation's largest mattress specialty retailer, as the team's first ever official sleep partner. Now, having been in and around partnership asset lists across the world and all the categories that come with it, I can't say I've ever seen an official sleep partner in the list. However, John Eck, Mattress Firm's president and CEO, said at the time, quote, "It's time people start putting the same value on sleeping as they do on eating well and exercising. I'm confident this partnership will help bring awareness to the importance of prioritizing sleep because the path to wellness starts with a good night's sleep," end quote. He makes a very good point, but still, it's an unusual category. How did that partnership first start being talked about? What's its origin story? While selling more mattresses was probably an obvious objective for them, how did you execute the partnership to help Mattress Firm sell more mattresses?
There has been a different brand in that category that has done a few things with some NFL players. And so what we really started to take notice of was, you know, hey, this sleep category or mattress category is open for us. And who could we identify as potential players in that category to reach out to? And so that one was one that we looked at and noticed that, you know, there were a few pretty key large players out there that we could potentially reach out to. And so we started to do that. And, you know, I mean, in terms of, you're right, like, selling mattresses, obvious objective, right? But it's also, you know, starting to understand and like, you know, again, through all these conversations of like what the overall objectives are of each individual partner that we're working with. And like mattresses are interesting because it's not like a cup of coffee. You know, you're not deciding, oh, I want to go to, you know, Pete's Coffee today on my drive in. Mattresses may take, you know, 6 months to make a decision on, or, you know, you might not be ready to make, you know, a large purchase like that until a holiday or whatever it may be. So while there are metrics that we want to make sure we're hitting on where they're selling more mattresses during the 49er season, sure, we also want to make sure that when somebody does make the decision that they're going to buy a mattress, that Mattress Firm is top of mind. And so even certain things like, you know, I know it's a traditional asset, but them having a like large static sign right by our play clock in Levi's Stadium. If somebody comes to the stadium and they're a season ticket member and they see that for four straight months, then, you know, our goal would be at the end of the year, because they've also seen all the things we're doing with Mattress Firm on digital and social and on the video boards and everything else, that Mattress Firm is positioned as their top, you know, choice for purchasing a mattress or any other type of sleep equipment.
Another not so common category, or one that's developing, is Incogmeato and Morningstar Farms as your first ever official plant-based protein of the 49ers. How does that category get identified? Is it a matter of surveying and profiling fans and having conversation as to what they want on match days as food and beverage options? Or did you identify what is really a growing sector and then went out and found suitable partners?
I think it's the latter. I mean, being in the Bay Area, that kind of plant-based movement was, you know, and still remains, but particularly a couple of years ago when it first came on the scene, was huge. And I mean, you could see it and feel it literally. You know, I mean, I would go into Safeway and you would see all of the options that you had there, you know, available for purchase and the shelf space that they had. And it goes back to, you know, how we identify potential partners, right? Safeway is a key partner of ours, but I also look at a lot of the other, you know, CPG brands that are carried in Safeway, and, you know, want to talk with them about how we can amplify what they're doing at retail across the Bay Area. And so with the plant-based protein category, you know, Incogmeato was a new brand at the time that was looking to come onto the scene and really establish themselves. And this was a priority market for them. And then Morningstar Farms has been more of like, you know, the legacy kind of alternative, healthier option that's been around for a while. So there were a lot of cool things we could do to layer, you know, really both brands into the partnership there. And in addition to that, yeah, our fans do index toward, as Morningstar Farms and Incogmeato calls them, flexitarians, you know, wanting to be able to, you know, look and source other options outside of, you know, red meat or chicken or whatever it may be on a game day. And our Levy concessions team does an awesome job of featuring them here at Levi's on game days. And then they obviously leverage our partnership in a number of other ways at retail across the Bay.
I could definitely identify as a flexitarian, as somebody who only eats sort of red meat once or twice a week. Now, for those brands, Incogmeato and Morningstar Farms, following on from that, you spoke about there's a lot of cool things that can be layered into the partnerships. Supplying products for sale on game day has the obvious benefit to the partner. It impacts the bottom line. But was there anything else activated as part of the partnerships to help those brands?
Incogmeato has done a really good job with some of their digital content. They've worked with one of our star players, Kyle Juszczyk, a couple of different times now, and filmed some content. You know, one was during the pandemic, which made filming a little challenging. But Kyle actually prepared one of their plant-based burgers at his home and tried that you know with our team reporter at the time and kind of created this cool social media video. Incogmeato and Morningstar Farms also have like a large sign here at Levi's Stadium. And one of the goals with that is kind of this, you know, just 360 customer journey, right? Like maybe they're seeing the sign for the first time and wondering what the brand is, or maybe they're seeing it on the concourse for the first time and trying out the product. In addition to all of the heavy, like digital social, our hope is that when they get to Safeway, their, you know, purchase intent has increased because of all the different ways they've engaged with the brand by being a Niners fan.
Sounds like lots of great growth on the brand and the category front, but growth can also come from new markets as well. With the new international market permissions granted by the NFL, what sort of analysis went into the 49ers picking up Mexico, and what other markets do you wish or are thinking to leverage? What is the engagement goal of those markets, and what types of partner benefits can be delivered for those organizations who can't, let's be honest, necessarily then physically engage with the 49ers because of their location?
I think this is a broader organizational priority. And so there's a lot of different stakeholders and people that help push this through. We were fortunate enough to be awarded two different international markets as an NFL club, which only a handful of them did receive more than one. Mexico, as you mentioned, and then the UK. And for us, with Mexico specifically, you know, being in Northern California, we have a very large Hispanic fan base. We index well in Mexico relative to other NFL fan bases. And so I think the goal there, you know, we've even done a lot of things to push out like exclusive Spanish content that our marketing team has put together. The goal there really is to just grow the game in Mexico, but specifically grow our fan base as much as we can. And you're right, like we are limited in terms of everything that we can do. It helped this past year that we played a game at Estadio Azteca in Mexico City. So we played the Cardinals back last season, which was great. We did a lot of on-site activations down there for that game. We had like a 49ers fan house in Mexico City. It was an awesome time. There's also like heavy IP usage, as you can imagine. We're lucky in that the 49ers Oval is a pretty recognizable logo. It spans multiple generations now. So, you know, even a fan in Mexico that may not be as familiar with NFL still may recognize the logo and you know, grow in an attempt to continue to grow the fan base down there and grow the NFL popularity.
As I mentioned, you are focused on sales, and there comes a point where a brand is being looked after. I don't want to use the words handed off to the activation team, so to speak, but it does become their responsibility to activate the partnership. When does the activation team become involved with a brand that you're speaking to? Are they involved right from the start during the prospecting, or is it later on?
It's later on, but I know this varies team by team, and maybe I'm biased, but I do really like the way that we approach it, because the word you used with the handoff is definitely what we're trying to avoid, right? So for us, we typically, when a conversation we're having with a potential partner has a lot of good momentum going, we try and bring in our activation team kind of right at that finish line, right? And the goal there is, as we're having kind of our final conversations before partnership, as well as our initial conversations kicking the partnership off the ground, that both myself and our activation manager are involved in all those talks and fully aligned on where the partner wants to take everything that they're doing. I stay involved in the conversations, particularly in the early on, to make sure that everything gets off the ground. And then once we're in a pretty good place and it feels like I can kind of take a step back, we definitely lean on the activation team to execute a lot of it. Our sellers here are also very much involved throughout, though, because we continue to work on the partnership even as we try to extend and renew our partners too. So there's a lot of touch points throughout. There's a lot of regular meetings that are involved, and we try to take a pretty active role.
A bit of a tricky one, I suppose, but the large amount of player movement in the off-season, how does that affect corporate partner engagements, and what sort of comms goes into partners knowing what is going on in balance with, obviously, you get to keep confidentiality?
You know, I'll be honest, I don't really know much more than any one of our season ticket members when it comes to what's going to happen with the players in the off season, right? Or in a given week. I suppose it'd be cool to have that peek behind the curtain, but the football side of our business is, definitely not the side that I'm involved in, right? Over on the business side. So, we're all fans too. We're sitting here in free agency and during the NFL draft and thinking about who's going to join the team or who could potentially do it. And so I fortunately don't have to keep much confidentiality in the sense of I don't really know anything. So, as it relates to partnerships, there are players that are more involved than others in certain activations that we do. You know, some may have grown up here or have ties to the Bay Area, and so they're very community focused. To be honest, those ones really are just kind of evaluated in a one-off nature. If a player does leave the team and he's been really involved in our partnerships or in the community, then, we may need to have a conversation with that partner of like, hey, we need to switch this up a little bit given this news. But I'm certainly not hearing that news before the rest of the world.
We know teams focus usually as a foundation on finding brands that want to connect with their fans, but that's B2C, business to consumer, mattresses, airlines, plant-based protein, eyewear, tequila, etc. What about partnerships that are B2B focused? Do the 49ers focus on that space much? And if so, it'd be great to hear some examples of the type of brands and what you're helping them achieve.
Being here in the Bay Area, we have one of the largest, if not the largest, tech sectors in the country, right? And so they, most of the time, can be B2B focused partnerships. Our fan base definitely trends toward, let's call it tech decision maker, right? You definitely have those fans sitting in our crowd and following along, given where we are in the world. And so I think what we try to do with our B2B focused partnerships is give our partners a really unique, case study or just different point of view for them to share with their world. One example of that would be our partners at SAP. When they came on, we decided they're a founding partner of ours as well. And we decided that we were going to build something completely new and different with them. That's, you know, that they had never done in the sports world. And that became the executive huddle, which is something that we're really proud of via that partnership. Essentially, it is a real-time data visualization platform. So we, our business analytics team, can watch a multitude of dashboards on game day and pinpoint in real time areas that we need to address to enhance the fan experience. If a concession stand is, you know, falling behind and has a much longer average wait time than another stand, we might go there and be able to send someone there in real time and realize that, you know, they're out of cups or they're out of hot dogs. And we can solve that problem a lot quicker than we would have been able to without SAP. So that's the main focus there, is just kind of, again, working with the partner to find out, you know, what makes them tick and what they're really going for, and then giving them something unique that they can share with not only their world, but also the sports world.
I love that real-time example that you gave there. I'm sure you love all your partnerships equally, but you can't give a politician's answer here. Out of all the partnerships that you've brought to the 49ers, what's one you're really, really proud of and why?
I do love them all equally, but I'll give you two here because I just think that there's uniqueness, I guess, behind both of them. The first was our partnership with Redbox and the Redbox Bowl game that we had at Levi's Stadium. I can't say particularly, you know, that was my first season selling partnerships for the Niners. I can't say that I ever anticipated selling the naming rights to a college football bowl game. It was really cool. It also featured a Pac-12 school versus a Big Ten school. And I went to Arizona State. So the Pac-12 is, you know, I guess near and dear to me. But like the moment of seeing the Redbox Bowl on like the bottom line of ESPN and seeing like what the matchup was going to be was just pretty surreal for me, to be honest. Being a sports fan my whole life and, you know, just having something show up on ESPN like that was awesome, truthfully. And then another one that I'm really proud of, I mentioned them earlier, but our partners over at Zenni are phenomenal. And they, you know, again, I might be biased, but I think they have done one of the best jobs in all of pro sports in activating against their partnership with us. Meaning, you know, they have their investment that they have set aside to, you know, do their 49ers partnership. But then they have gone above and beyond that to really lean into the partnership and amplify what they're doing. And one of the ways they did that, they came on as partners. And then in addition to that, they actually signed an endorsement deal with our star tight end, George Kittle. And George and his wife, Claire, actually ended up over time releasing their entire own collection of eyewear, the Kittle's collection, that's featured on Zenni's website. They shot commercials with George and are just super active throughout the Bay Area. In terms of their media mix, and they really value our partnership and do whatever they can to showcase it. So it's great when you have an idea and you think, hey, this eyewear company would make a great partner. And then not only do they say yes to that, but they actually lean all the way in and, you know, make it a key pillar of their strategy.
Yeah, I can imagine that's amazing. It kind of takes on a life of its own and you just sort of push them in the right direction. Cameron, thank you so much for the amazing chat. I found that really insightful, so I am sure the listeners have as well. If people want to get in touch and connect with you or find out more about what the 49ers are doing in the sponsorship and partnership space, what can they do? Where can they go?
I appreciate it, Daniel. It was great. Thank you for having me. I'm on LinkedIn, Cameron O'Toole. I know you'll post this when the podcast goes live here, but definitely feel free to reach out to me. I will say that's something that I really love about the sports industry is, you know, I think for all of us to get our start in this industry, we've had help along the way. And I was, you know, in grad school listening to interviews like this and reaching out to people on LinkedIn. So I always try and pay it forward. So you can certainly reach out to me there. But thanks again.
Cameron O'Toole, Senior Manager, Partnership Sales. Thank you so much for taking us inside sponsorship at San Francisco 49ers.
Thanks, Daniel.
Great chat with Cameron and some really great partnerships spoken about there. I do like that he and the 49ers don't just stick to the same old categories and industries when they're considering partners to bring on board. I love Cameron's always on mentality, and that he's always looking at which brands are active in the market, and then his ability to walk the line between it's not a no forever, it's just a no for now, and then focusing on relationships and having a reason to make contact, as opposed to being the pushy sales guy just following up because you're on a list and it's about time we made contact. If you want to connect with Cameron on LinkedIn, just search for Cameron O'Toole. That's O apostrophe T O-O-L-E. And of course, you can follow San Francisco 49ers at 49ers.com. Finally, if you'd like a shout out, please keep them coming in as it makes me happy. Or maybe you just want to connect and say hi, then I'd totally love to hear from you. I do get a real kick out of it, so please do connect with me on LinkedIn. Just search for Daniel Oyston. That's O-Y-S-T-O-N. That's a wrap for episode 121. Until next time, I'm Daniel Oyston. Thanks for listening to Inside Sponsorship.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more episodes and to subscribe to the show, search for Inside Sponsorship on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever it is you listen to your podcasts. Also, for more free industry-specific resources, including blogs, ebooks, white papers, and our Insights newsletter, head to coresoftware.com. Finally, be sure to follow Core Software on Twitter and LinkedIn.